Good morning. Good morning, Pathways. I am delighted to be back with you and sharing in this series that we have been working through called Influencers. And the point of this series was to look at some of the lesser known people in the scriptures, some of the stories that you might not hear firsthand. The story today is one of a man. It's about a family, actually. It's about a family. And it's about a man who was able to influence another man, and the other man was able to be an influencer to him as well. And so we're going to go ahead and get started. It's a long story, so I'm going to kind of tell you the background of it. I would invite you this week to be able to go and read through, because it really tracks through the story of Exodus. And if you remember, the Exodus is named after the children of Israel as they were being delivered from the slavery in Egypt and the long journey in which that took. The story of Exodus actually, as I did the math, goes for about 120 years. So everybody sit back. We've got a long track to go to talk about 120 years. But I'll try to just give you the highlights, and then we'll dig into what I think that the Lord has for us today. So the sermon is entitled Jethro. And it is a word to the wise. And the story can be found in Exodus 2. Jethro is mentioned there. And then it picks up again in Exodus 18 and all the things that happen in between. So, Jethro was the father-in-law of Moses. You may remember Moses. And he was also the father of Zipporah, and that was his daughter. Jethro is first mentioned in Exodus 2:16, where he was described as a priest of Midian. Now, in Exodus 2, it details the account of Moses' first encounter with Jethro. So, here's the backstory. When Moses was on the run from the Pharaoh after he had killed an Egyptian, he found himself in Midian by a well. Jethro, who had 7 daughters, were there, and they were beginning to water their herd. While they were there, a group of men started harassing the women. Moses walks up, he sees them, and he chases them off. Now, not only does Moses chase off the men, he actually waters the sheep. Now, I did a little research because I always go down all these rabbit holes with these things. I was like, well, I wonder how long it took to water a herd of sheep. Now, I was not able to find out that answer exactly, but I can tell you this. I am a city girl, don't know much about sheep. But in my mind, it's only common sense that if it took 7 people to come and water a herd of sheep, and it took them a good bit of time to do it, for one man to do it, that would be a lot of work. So, the women were grateful to not have to be able to water the sheep that day. And when they went home, Jethro, the father, said, "Why are you home so early?" And they said, "Oh, this man helped us. He drove off these men who were harassing us, and he watered the sheep." And he said, "Well, where is he? Didn't you bring him to the house to say thank you?" And they said no. So the oldest daughter went, got him, brought him back. Now, over the course of time, Jethro gave his daughter, Zipporah, to Moses as his wife. And they had 2 sons. And Moses stayed with the Midianites for approximately 40 years. At that point, God called him into ministry. He spoke to him through a burning bush. You may remember Charlton Heston when he, Moses, here I am, Lord. Okay, one of my favorite movies. God spoke to him through the burning bush to deliver the Israelites who were enslaved by the Pharaoh in Egypt. Moses comes back to his father-in-law Jethro, and Jethro gives Moses his blessing to be able to return back to his people. So Moses leaves the Midianites, and along with the help of his brother Aaron, Moses pleads for the Pharaoh to release the Israelites. The Pharaoh did let them go after a series of plagues. You may remember locusts and frogs and flies and ultimately the death of all the firstborn sons. But after he let them go, he changed his mind and chased them to the desert. After they all were in the desert, the Lord opened up the Red Sea. The Israelites crossed through. They got to the other side. The army that the Pharaoh was leading were all drowned in the Red Sea. That's the backstory of the Exodus. Now, today we will start at the portion where the Israelites have now entered into the desert. So, God, through Moses, had delivered them, and God had a good and perfect plan for the Israelites. He was going to deliver them to the promised land, a land of milk and honey, and he was going to be their God there. Well, as these things turn out, the Israelites were, how do I want to explain the Israelites? They weren't necessarily gracious in their attitude toward God and living in the desert. As a matter of fact, they were complainers. They complained every single day. Why are we here? We would have been better off as slaves in Egypt. They were complainers. But even in that, God in his mercy said, I will deliver you to this land, but it's going to take a little while because I need you to change your attitude. So he let them walk around in the desert for 40 years as they tried to get themselves together. We'll look at that as kind of a timeout. All right. As they are in the desert, Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, has now heard about all that has happened in Egypt. Now, this had to be some gossip line because he seemed to know the whole story of everything that had happened. So, in chapter 18, Jethro sends a message to Moses saying that he is going to bring his daughter, Zipporah, and the Moses' sons to them, to him in the desert. And clearly Moses had trusted Jethro because he left his wife and children with them because he was probably afraid of what would happen to them during all the course of what was going on in Egypt. So the relationship between Moses and Jethro had always been cordial. Jethro had often offered fatherly advice to Moses. When he first met Moses, Moses was at a place in his life where he was broken. He was a broken man. He was a murderer. He had killed someone. He did not really know who he was in the big scheme of things. Moses had grown up in the palaces of Egypt. But he came to find out that he was a Hebrew. He was at a point in his life where he was hurt, confused, angry, scared, and he ran away. That's how he ultimately met with Jethro. So, with all of that said, what I want to talk to you about this morning is influence, and specifically family influence. Now, John Maxwell, who is one of the most prolific writers of our day about leadership and influence, he says leadership at its very core is simply influence. And all of us are influencers, all of us are leaders, whether it's in our schools, whether it's in our workplace, whether it's in with our peers, co-workers, within organizations, we all have influence. We all have the opportunity to speak into someone's life for the good or for not so good. And we also have the opportunity to allow people to speak into our lives. This morning, I want to show you how influence done well, influence done in a godly way, can be transformative for the people that are involved. So, when I go back to the story of Moses after he had come in his broken state to Jethro, and as I said, he grew up in palaces and had all the wealth and everything that Egypt could afford. That's how he lived. Now he's in a situation where he's a runaway. He's killed someone. He's confused, he's hurt, and he runs upon a family of shepherds. So he literally goes from living in a palace to living out in a desert with shepherds. I think that in order to receive, in order to be a part of a influential relationship and to allow godly influencers into our lives, that we have to be aware of who we are. We have to go into situations humbly. And at that point, that's where Moses was. He was humble. He knew that he couldn't help himself. He knew that God could use him, I suppose, but why would he? I think sometimes we all feel like that, that the things in our past, the things that we have done, preclude us from being used by God. But as we know in this story, God was able to use Moses mightily, and this should encourage us, but it should also humble us. He will use us if we can humble ourselves before him and acknowledge that he is Lord. So, when Moses got to his father-in-law, and he had received the word from God, he had spent 40 years learning how to shepherd and take care of sheep and out in the wilderness. That in itself a humbling experience. And when the time was right, God called him. He went back to Jethro and immediately asked permission to leave that situation where he was at his home, to go back to Egypt. And the second thing that I'd want to say about a person who is a godly influence or in a godly relationship, that person will always encourage you to walk on your path. In that moment when Moses went back to Jethro after hearing from God, Jethro could have easily said to him at that time, "Well, son, I need you here. I mean, you're working with me. I'm an old man." He could have discouraged him. Could have been selfish. But he didn't. After 40 years of Moses working and growing the flock and being a help, he was able to let him go. Another point that I would make up in their relationship, or in any healthy relationship when you're talking about godly influences, is that it should be reciprocal. Godly influence can go both ways, and it should. In Jethro's state, in verse 5, it said, "Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, together with Moses' sons and wife, came to him in the wilderness, where he camped near the mountain of God. And Jethro had sent word to him, 'I am your father-in-law, Jethro, and I'm coming to you with your wife and your two sons.' So Moses went out to meet his father-in-law and bowed down and kissed him. And they greeted each other, and then they went into the tent. And then Moses told his father about everything the Lord had done to Pharaoh and the Egyptians for Israel's sake, and about all the hardships they had met along the way, and how the Lord saved them." When Jethro sent word to Moses that he was coming, Moses showed the utmost respect to his father-in-law. He came out and he greeted him personally. I want to make an observation here that sometimes when things kind of turn around for a person and they may not always be at the bottom anymore, and they've had a few victories in their life, they might want to show off, act like they're better than their family. Moses was leading a nation. He could have sent out an assistant. He could have just waited for Jethro to come to him, but he didn't do that. He was a busy man, but he went out and he met his father-in-law. Moses was big time. He wasn't a sheep herder anymore. But he knew that he still had to give honor to the man who had mentored him. Now, Jethro himself was described as a Midian priest, and most scholars say that he would have been a person who believed in many gods. But if you go on to read the passage in Exodus 18, it said that Jethro said, blessed be the Lord who has delivered you out of the hands of the Egyptians and out of the hands of Pharaoh and has delivered the people from under the hands of the Egyptians. Now I know the Lord is greater than all gods, because in this affair they dealt arrogantly with the people. And then Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, brought a burnt offering and sacrifices to God. And Aaron came with all the elders of Israel to eat bread with Moses, father-in-law, before God. This is a really big deal. It may not sound like it, but as I said, Jethro was probably, because he was a Midianite priest, polytheistic. But here it says that he praised God and he said, "Now I know that the Lord is greater than all the gods." Some theologians take this passage as Jethro's conversion. And what is so encouraging about that is that when we pursue godly relationships, when we attempt to influence people for the good and for God, that their lives can be transformed. In this situation, Moses simply told his testimony. And nobody can really argue with your testimony. He was able to tell Jethro simply of what the Lord had done. And in return, Jethro believed. It's a reciprocal relationship. Moses didn't take any credit for himself. He gave it all to God. And then we see Jethro, who was an older man at this time. He could have been Moses' father. He was his father-in-law. And he had already been a priest and had already served. He could have been close to what Moses was saying. As I was saying before, there's sometimes that people always want you to be broken and be at the bottom of the pile. And they want to hold the past over you. Jethro didn't do any of those things with Moses. But nor was he jealous. Nor was he, he sees that this man has now become a ruler of a nation. And he was the one that had picked him up and helped him to become a shepherd. Jethro was mature, and he was able to see for himself how God was using his son, and he was able to rejoice in what the Lord was doing for Moses. As the passage goes on, Moses takes Jethro, and he's showing him the village and how things are working. And he notices that Moses is sitting in what was called the judgment seat of that day, and all of the people of Israel used to come to Moses one by one, and he would judge over each case. And this probably took all day as people stood in line. And Jethro just quietly observed what was happening. At the end of the day, he pulled Moses aside and he said, "What you're doing is not good." Now, I wonder in that moment, what would have happened if Moses had responded negatively? I wonder sometimes how we respond to criticism and to feedback from people who are over us. Moses could have taken that time and said, "What do you know about running a nation? You just have a few sheep out in the desert. How are you trying to tell me about organizational systems?" But he didn't do that. He could have been defensive. "You've been here for like 5 minutes and now you know how to run everything?" Sometimes we're like that. But Moses listened to what his father-in-law said. And Jethro gave Moses some sound advice on how to organize his people so they could all be heard. Jethro advised Moses to train others in the law so they could be of help to him. And even though the plan sounded good, he also said, "You need to take this back to God and pray about it." What's instructive for us in this is that a lot of times we want to speak the truth to people, but sometimes when we speak the truth, we do it with ulterior motives. We do it to show we might know more. We do it because to embarrass the other person. But that wasn't the case with Jethro. Jethro gave him that advice because he loved him and he didn't want to see him worn out by all the work that he was doing. He said that the load was too heavy. He spoke the truth to him in love, and out of genuine concern. And then, like I said, he drew Moses' attention back to God. And that's what godly influencers do. And Moses took that advice, and he built teams. And instead of taking the responsibility on himself, he shared the load with others. And he broke people up into groups of hundreds and thousands, and had each other, he taught his leaders the law. And then from there, they were able to teach it to others. He was able to delegate. And he held on to the hardest cases for himself. And what's interesting about this odd little story and about this odd little relationship that I'm telling you about this morning, I mean, it really doesn't seem like it's a very big deal. But in fact, it is. Because of Jethro's ability to positively influence his son-in-law, he was able to place a system or a model that we use today in churches with deacons and elders and godly people who are gifted to work certain things. And in Jethro's life, because he was humble and because he was in relationship, in a trusted relationship with Moses, he was able to be transformed and understand the one true God. There's a lot that we can learn about the relationship of these two men in this story. And I hope you take the time this week to read about them. Because that's what we're called to. We're called to be in right relationship. We are called to be in transforming relationships with one another. We're called to lead. We're called to influence. We're called to point people toward God. I want to remind you of our mission statement here at Pathways. We want to be able to walk with people so they can be changed in a relationship with Jesus Christ. And that's a big statement, to be able to change lives. And the only way that that can be done is through relationships with God and with each other. That's how it was done from the beginning, and that's what we strive to do today, to be influencers. So I guess the question is, who are you influencing, and who are you allowing to influence you? Are you building relationships that point you to Christ, to deepen your relationship with Christ? Transformation. That's the business that we're in as believers. And this little model in this family is instructive for us in terms of how we can go about doing that. Let's pray. God, it is hard to be an influence in your family. Probably because your family knows you best. They know the good and the bad. They've seen it all. Help us to be able to simply and consistently point them to you. And help us, Father, to be people that can take and receive and implement godly influence in our lives as well. And at the end of the day, may your name be lifted up and praised. And we say this in your Son, Jesus Christ's name. Amen.